Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 200 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Roy.
I'm a compulsive overeater and a miracle of mental health. My name is Roy L.
Hi, Roy.
Mickey asked me, do you remember the format? I said, yeah, I wrote it. I'm the one who started this meeting. I was the first secretary. Our first speaker was Roseanne S. The people who did service, well, Leslie was on pretty early, and Walter G. and Sandy L. And they did a lot of service here, especially Walter in the early days, and we started taping the speakers, and then John Kay came in and took it and said he thought he could get the board to approve putting him on the internet. And next thing you know, now we're what, a podcast and all this? This is great stuff. But I'm glad to see the meeting's still gone. I'll tell you why I started it. It was pure vanity and resentment. I just got sick of trying to jam my story into 20 minutes at Serenity Sunday and these other speaker meetings. I'm with the mothership also, so I know what a big AA speaker meeting is like, where we have a main speaker and tape the speaker and all that. And so I had something to compare it to, and I said, well, you guys are not doing it right. Yeah. And of course I wasn't that well received. So if you think the meeting's named about giving candles for birthdays, it's not. It's named after an old slogan, why curse the darkness when you can light a candle? I said, well, these people don't know any better. I have to show them the way. And that is a typical example of God. If you read that seven-step prayer in the big book, it says, God, my creator, I now when you have all of me, good and bad. And God will literally take my character defects, like vanity or ego, whatever you want to call it, pride, and he'll use them. And he'll leave me some defects of character, because we can't seem to hear saints in this program. You know, a friend of mine says, I don't know why that we have to learn in church basements what everybody else seems to be able to learn up there in the cathedral, the chapel, but it's true. maybe because we just can't learn. The book says you never talk down to another compulsive overeater. Every time I quote from the book, I'll be transliterating for our program. Been in Santa Monica, I guess about 13 years. 13 years ago when I first spoke at Serenity Sunday, I said, you see this book? What the hell are you guys doing, trying to reinvent the wheel here? And they finally got the message, I'll tell you. But they didn't get it from me, because I never had that win friends and influence people. There's always that, look, you idiots, you're perverting the program, you don't know what you're doing, you know? So they couldn't get it from me. I can understand that. I base my public relations program on repulsion rather than attraction, but people who stuck with me through the steps, like this character here, seem to be doing pretty well. So, and this meeting's doing pretty well, so that gives me a great sense of gratitude and satisfaction. But even my character defects can help somebody else. That's the way the higher power works. He can have all me good and bad, and he'll do what he wants. And I better remember who to give the credit to either, because I have that kind of recovery ego, and the ego does grow back. This program is about ego deflation. It's in the book. It's in the 12 and 12. And the ego wants to grow back because disease wants me dead. It'll settle for me fat and binging, but it wants me dead ultimately. And my ego will grow back, and I'll try and turn a miracle into an accomplishment. And I better always remember that I had no power in me whatsoever when I hit my bottom. And for those of you who are impressed by such things, my top weight was 280-something. It's over 100 pounds of where I am now. I've gained and lost 80 pounds at least three times. I've been on the Stillman diet, the amphetamines, the pregnant hormone shots, the liquid protein, and various, you know, other diets. And I got abstinent in 1978, and I've been abstinent 31 plus years. And I credit my higher powers. I don't understand him, but as I still pray to him on my knees, God, as I don't understand him, works for me. And when I say I'm abstinent, I mean the obsession has been removed. I got in the 10-step promises in the book, and the book says I'm not going to fight food. I'm not cocky, nor am I afraid. I've been removed to a safe, neutral ground. The problem has been removed. When I'm God-centered, I'm not food-centered. It's that simple. There's no spiritual side to this program. It is a spiritual program. It's not group therapy. It's not a support group. It has a certain superficial veneer which resembles group therapy and support. But at the heart, this program is simple. It's about finding God and about removing the obstacles which block me from that higher power. And the book is clear. In this book, you will hear the stories of men and women and how they have built a personal relationship with a God of their own understanding. And that's what this program has always been about, whether people want to rewrite the steps and come out with their own version or whatever. That's what it has been about from the beginning. And the only way that I can make contact with that power is I have to start removing the obstacles which block me from that power. And it starts with putting down the fork. Just like an alcoholic, he has to put down the first drink. He has to separate from alcohol. That's how the voyage begins. I cannot make contact with a higher power if I'm overeating. So how does a compulsive overeater put down the fork? Well, we have tools here. We have a food plan. We have a sponsor, a food sponsor. We have the telephone. We have writing. We have meetings. These are all tools to help me put down the fork, clear the mind. Believe me, for an alcoholic, especially first edition level guys, and I happen to be one of those too, when I hit the bottom with booze, they had to hospitalize me. They thought I was going to have a convulsion in the AA clubhouse. So people say to me, well, what do you do about the feelings? Well, that's they don't call it the joy of giving up compulsive overeating. They call it withdrawal, you know. If I stop compulsively overeating, I will soon be in touch with why I was compulsively overeating. Every reason, every low self-esteem, every more than, less than, every resentment, every, you know, molestation memory or whatever, abuse memory, everything I ate over will come up. And that's what happens when I put down the first compulsive bite or the fork. And it's going to come up. And in AA, they used to just put them in a hospital. Most of the people who wrote the book were hospitalized. You didn't just walk into a meeting in those days. In OA, we have to, or I had to anyway, put down the fork and start this journey. Let's see. I guess I'll tell you my food log to convince you that I belong here. I came from a family of compulsive overeaters. My father became an adult onset diabetic. My whole family's always on diets. I got a cold, so I'm a little subdued tonight, but I don't believe it or not. The doctor told him, Mr. Levin, you just put down the, you know, control your carbs, control your intake of sugar. You take these little Oura-based tablets. It's just like taking a one-a-day multiple vitamin. It'll be no problem. It'll hardly put an impact in your life. My mother would find half-eaten boxes of chocolates under his bed. Insanity for a diabetic. Sure enough, he wound up shooting insulin, and it probably shortened his life. My mother was always on diets. My brother's been up to 300 pounds. He went down. He's on his way up again. He's been to OA meetings. He's not ready yet. He prefers antidepressants and whatever he's doing. That's my family. I mean, I came from a family of compulsive overeaters. I was fat when I was 7. By the time I was 7, I was already overweight. They never could figure out the alcohol. I'm the only alcoholic in my family. So that kind of spooked them a little bit. But I once thought the solution to my problem was light beer. But, you know, I got up to like 12, 16 ounce cans of light beer. It wasn't. But then I try to be a vegetarian, live on vodka and mashed potatoes, which is bad. I gain weight on that food plan. So when you're an alky, it's really a problem because you go on these crazy diets and, you know, I'm always thirsty, you know. Anyway, my family were compulsive overeaters. Amphetamines, I lost 80 pounds on amphetamines when I was still in my teens, I think. My second big diet was the Stillman diet. I don't know if you remember that. You ate nothing but protein and washed it out with the fluids so you didn't get ketosis. I lost 80 pounds on that. I identify also with an exercise bulimic. At the height of my insanity with exercise, I was in Florida at the time. I was literally, I went on that Stillman diet and I was losing the weight. I was working out at the gym, lifting weights about three times a week. I was in the judo club. I was swimming about a mile a day in the Miami pool, which was an Olympic-sized pool at the university. I got up to running 12 miles a day in 90-degree heat, 90-degree humidity. Nobody was running back then. This was way back, believe me. I'm a long time around. So, I mean, the running craze was just starting, you know, with Jim Fix and Farrah Fawcett was on the cover of People with their little running suit on, you know. But trust me, nobody was running in Miami in 90-degree heat, 90-degree temperature, high noon back then, except me and this crazy gym teacher and this one other guy. I forget what his story was. And it wasn't even a scenic route. It was like around the practice soccer field around in the university. It was like it's like a rat in a maze. It really was insane. It says in the book that I'll go to the gates of insanity and death, deal with this disease. And literally, it's a form of insanity. And you know, what am I thinking? I'll run, I won't want to eat. I'll run, somehow find a new magic diet, I won't put the weight back. I don't know what I was thinking. You know, maybe I thought the obsession would be relieved. Who knows what I was thinking? It was just insanity. But I had no spiritual solution. So I'm running around like a rat in a maze. Okay? Diets work. That's why our program is spiritual. Because if you join a diet club, Weight Watchers, whatever, you're going to get physical recovery. You'll lose weight if you go on one of these crazy diets. I always did. I lost 80 pounds on amphetamines. I lost 80 pounds on the Stillman diet. The problem is our disease is spiritual in nature. Unless I'm building a personal relationship with a higher power, the insanity that a half gallon of mint chip ice cream, which was my drug of choice, a half gallon of mint chip ice cream will fix some financial insecurity, some, you know, rejection from a woman, or some boss gave me some shit, or I'm scared, or he pushed my buttons, or I got a resentment against you. That's insanity to think a half a gallon of mint chip ice cream is going to fix that, right? But if I don't have a spiritual connection with a higher power, guess what? That insanity comes back into my life, and I eat again. Because I proved it to myself over and over. So I'm losing weight, lost another 80 pounds, I'm running like a rat in a maze. I graduate, unfortunately, I wanted to be a professional student. My parents had been a little bit fed up, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I got thrown out of prep school, thrown out of my first time. I don't want to go into the drunk log, but, you know, I had to go back north where I'm from originally. So I go from Florida, 90 degree heat, 90 degree humidity, up to New Jersey. And now I'm up there in Jersey and I hate it. I start gaining the weight back. Okay? And I gain back. You know, the thing about compulsive overeating, the physical diets always work, but it never gets rid of the obsession. So every time I lose it, it was just this agony, you know, waiting to hit some magic number on the scale or something. And then when the obsession comes back, it comes back with more fury. And I always gain a little bit more weight on the rebound, you know, when it comes back than I lost the original. It's like a stock market chart, you know, it's making new highs, you know. There's a few pullbacks to the trend line, but it's on the way up. And that's why I know if I go out again, I could be, you know, 300, 400 pounds, I may not make it back. Probably I wouldn't make it back. Because my recovery ego wouldn't allow me to come in here and raise my hand as a newcomer. And that's what I got to watch out for. At this point in the game, I got to watch out for complacency resting on my laurels and recovery ego. You know, when I was new, it was all insane to me then, but now it's an advanced form of insanity. So, anyway, so I'm a compulsive overeater, right? And I go back north, I gain it all back. So what do I do? I go to the pregnant hormone doctor. Remember those? HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin. Things stick in my mind, right? So we're lining up. We got this really thin, greedy, smiling osteopath. And he's got, this guy's a real shyster. You know? If I wasn't in the program, that's the business I'd be in, by the way. Crash diets. I'd hire some crooked doctor and we'd go on television making $1 million. Seriously. It's the easiest business in the world. Unfortunately, I'm on a spiritual path. So there's an osteopath. He's got two clinics going. He's got one going in Jersey. He's got one in Pennsy across the river, across the Delaware River there where I'm from. And he's grinning, and he's got all these fat women and a few fat men like myself lined up. And we're giving him $25 to weigh us in. He looks at us and he grins. He gives us this Auschwitz diet. You know, he's got 500 calories a day. Every time you show up, you give him some money, he shoots you up with this HCG, which is complete bullshit, you know. Now, you go on a 500-calorie-a-day diet, guess what? You're going to lose weight. No shit. But now I'm up in New Jersey. It's not Florida anymore, so I go from running in 90-degree heat, 90-degree humidity, to now I'm up there running in blizzards with a ski mask on, you know, a little vibe. Snowflakes are coming. I'm running down a snowplow. And, you know, the porches, they have these wooden houses back east, you know, with porches and stuff they don't have too much down here. Well, they have a few down here. But guy comes out in, like, his overcoat to get his paper in the morning. You know, the paper guy throws the paper on his porch. He comes out in his, like, overcoat and muffler to get his paper, and he sees me running behind the snow pile. He goes, "Hey, Rocky, yeah, yeah, yeah." So he puts a fire on the Olympic team or something, you know. Who the hell else is running in a snowstorm behind a snowplow with a ski mask on besides a compulsive overeater? I mean, this is exercise bulimia, exercise addiction. It's insanity. Lost the weight. No kidding. You know, I joined a gym in New Jersey. I'm running behind a snowplow. I'm eating 500 calories a day. But this is not fixed, and this is not fixed. Guess what happens? You know, back comes the weight. I'll get to my bottom quickly because it's always a fun story to tell. My last series diet was the liquid protein. I literally went over a month without solid food, living on this shit. I dropped 30 pounds the first 30 days. I mean, diets work, but this is not a diet club. This is a spiritual program. Okay, it's about making a personal relationship with a higher power. So I was literally trying to take a tennis lesson. I had so little blood sugar or strength, I could hardly lift a racket. You know, it was like I canceled my tennis lesson. I'll never forget it. It was a Friday night in Miami. All my friends are down in Coconut Grove chasing the women. They're getting blasted. They're getting high. I'm sitting in this studio apartment in Miami with not enough energy to have to take a tennis lesson. You know, there's a saying, you don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Well, I don't know if hungry quite cuts it when I haven't had, you know, solid food for 30 days, you know. But I remember literally saying, I wanted to weigh in Monday, there was a certain magic number, I guess, on the dial, and then I would eat again. What are you thinking when you're on these diets? I can't tell you what I was thinking because it's nuts. I guess I was thinking Monday I wouldn't want to compulsively overeat, or the obsession would be removed, or I'd find a magic food plan, keep the weight off this time, I'd be able to. I don't know what I was thinking, because I don't think I'm thinking too straight, right? I'm living in a delusional world, you know, pizza pie in hand, I warp my mind. And so basically I couldn't do it. I couldn't get through the weekend, the Monday. It was Friday night and everybody was having fun except me, living in the nightmare of, you know, of the liquid protein nightmare, purgatory, whatever. I remember literally like leaning on the wall. I was so dizzy when I got up to get to, and I went out to my car. Babyland was just around the corner, this big shopping center. And I went in there, here's how a compulsive overeater and alcoholic breaks one of his diets. I bought two cases of wine, not bottles, cases of wine and two pizzas, you know. And I started eating, I started drinking. And I'll just cut the story short to say that I wound up in jail that night. So I guess that's how I break my fast, see? That led to my starting to get sober, which took another year. And that led to, I'm in AA now, and the geniuses are saying things like, well, if you feel like taking a drink, just have a candy bar. These guys are brilliant, you know. But what they didn't know was I was fat before I was drunk. You know, I was fat since the age of 7. I wasn't drunk since to the ripe old age of 12, at least. So my childhood disease, you know, it's kind of an infantile drug food, you know. It's easier to get when you're a kid than alcohol or drugs. Came roaring back. I think the first couple months I was sober, I gained 30 pounds. I was out of control with the food. You know, I mean, I remember being 8 months sober on my knees. Because you come in these programs, you hear about another one, you know. You got, you know, it's not just about not drinking, it's about, you know, healing in all areas, you know, all my affairs. And I'm out of control with the food 8 months sober. And I remember being on my knees saying, God, and when I get back to Miami, I was out of state, I was in Vermont actually. When I get back to Miami, I got to get to this OA program. So I come back into OA, come back to Miami, I go to my first OA meeting. Well, we got some men here tonight, including the speaker, Mickey, secretary. Trust me, in 1978 in Miami, I don't think there was a man at my first meeting. It was all women. I won't say they were old because they are now my age, but at the time I was a feisty young buck. I was still running 6 miles a day trying to keep the weight off, even in early sobriety, you know. And these were like these condo commandos from North Miami. You know? And I come into this meeting, and my attitude was not good. You know? It was kind of traumatic getting sober. You know, I had to be hospitalized. I'm a real alcoholic, too. I had to be hospitalized and the whole bit. And then all of a sudden, the food's out of control. And I was not thrilled to be in another 12-step program, trust me. And I come in there, my attitude was kind of like, what are these people doing with my big book? You know, like I'm Bill Wilson's long-lost grandson. I mean, I got a proprietary interest in spirituality at 8 months of sobriety. It was not a good attitude, friend. I was pissed off. I didn't want to be here. There were no men. And this woman comes up to me after the meeting. She says, where do you know the Serenity Prayer from? And I said, well, I'm an AA. And she goes, well, my name is Edie, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've lost 90 pounds and kept it off for 5 years. Now, that gets my attention. I don't care, you know. That's all I could hear. You know, this woman had lost 90 pounds and kept it off for 9 years. Well, I've lost 100 pounds and kept it off for 31-plus years. When Bill Wilson saw Ebbie Thatcher at the kitchen table, he said, never mind the musty past. There sits a miracle in front of me at my kitchen table. You know how much sobriety Ebbie had? 2 months. He's a miracle. Well, Edie was a miracle to me, and what the hell am I? And, or Mickey or anybody here. So that's how we get it from each other. She says, I'm Edie, I'm a compulsive overeater, I lost 90 pounds and kept it off for 5 years. That's all I had to hear. I'll be your sponsor. Well, it was all gray sheet back then, too. And I mean, when I say gray sheet, it was gray sheet. I mean, I had to call her before every meal. I'd say, well, I want to eat a pear instead of an apple. She said, no, too much sugar in the pear. Eat the apple. You know, she wouldn't let me put milk in my coffee. I'm on the same food plan that these women are, these matronly women, these condo commandos. I'm still a young buck running six miles a day and working out, and I was starving to death on gray sheet. I mean, I was stark craving abstinence. I lasted 2 weeks. I'm on my way to Paris, France. 8 months sober and 2 weeks abstinence. I'm on my way to Paris, ostensibly to study languages, in reality running from my problems, but we won't go there. But, and I could only learn that anglais cul, as the French say. I did learn French. Anyway, I'm on my way to Paris with 2 weeks of abstinence. And Edie says to me, well, you know, you're going on that flight, you better pack a brown bag lunch. I'm an alcoholic, so now I don't be packing no brown bags. You know, I call the, you know, that alcoholic ego. I call the airline. I say, how about these diabetic meals, you know, because I got to watch my carbs. I didn't tell her I was in an OA. I said, she says, no problem, Mr. Levin. We got diabetic meals. Blah, 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 blah. I get to check in. Yes, Mr. Diabetic meal. Yes, Mr. Levin. Get to the boarding pass. Diabetic meal. Yes, Mr. Levin. All right. So I've been starving on Gracie for 2 weeks. No coffee. No milk in the coffee, you know. I haven't eaten since 6 in the morning. You know, you're on the plane, you're boarding, you're up in the air, and it takes time for them to serve lunch. It's now about 2 in the afternoon, and I am hungry, just to say the word. I got starvation hunger, and I got real hunger. It's time to eat, and I'm a compulsive overeater who's insane over food anyway. Comes time to pass out the diabetic meals. Guess what? The food service forgot the diabetic meals. So she put something in front of me that I hadn't seen for 2 weeks. Like, you know, toast, potatoes, and of course there was cupcake. You know, airplane food, you know. It was worse back then than it is now. And it isn't any bargain now. But I just couldn't hold out. I mean, I just started eating. I took the first compulsive bite. I ate carbs, toast, potatoes, you know. But then the cupcake, you know, next, my neighbor didn't, can I have your cupcake? You know? So they said, you know, they say you hit the ground running. Well, I hit the ground in Paris eating. And I'm out of control of the food in Paris, France. And I mean, the OA group in Paris at the time was the shakiest, flakiest, most unrecovered group of clowns you ever saw in your life. You know, our French pioneer had started it. She was a doctor, a French doctor who did a residency in Atlanta. She was a gynecologist. She's since rebirthed herself as Natalie. Back then I knew her as Morissette, but she wants to be called Natalie, I'll call her Natalie. So Natalie took the program back to France in English. She got the pamphlets and the format from, I guess, World Service or whoever. And we had the Saturday meeting and the Monday night meeting. We had two meetings a week. And I mean, nobody was absent. I mean, Natalie was binging when I hit there. I hit the ground binging. Bob is 11 years sober. He's throwing up 11 times a day. The anorexic, whose parents were MDs, psychiatrists, and they couldn't believe with all their medical and psychiatric training they'd spawned an anorexic. And she's starving herself to death, and all the English women are all pairs. They're all binging. I mean, you know, the bulimics are puking, the overeaters are gorging, and the anorexics are starving. And I'm sitting there with 8 months of sobriety quoting the 12 and 12. Now, meanwhile, you know, what was I binging on mostly? Bread, cheese, and chocolate. Nothing I couldn't gotten back home. It was good bread, good cheese, and chocolate. French have really a well-developed haute cuisine. I mean, I take a pain ordinaire, not a baguette, that's a thin one, a pain. You know, it looks like a small Yule log. You know? And I cut it like this longitudinally, and I take about a quarter pound of butter, lather it up, and I take a whole wheel of coulommiers, which a French family could live off this for a week. And I lather it up, and I'd eat this thing for breakfast, and my French roommates would look at me, and then I wouldn't drink wine, because I'm in AA. And it just blew their mind. I offended every Gallic sensibility there is. And I mean, wouldn't you like a good burgundy with it? No, I can't touch alcohol. Meanwhile, I'm eating this huge meal. They don't even eat breakfast, the French. You know, they have like a bowl of cocoa or coffee or something. They used to drink out of bowls. Maybe the Americans ruined them with Cocoa Puffs by this time. But back then, these guys were, my French would eat like drink a bowl of cocoa. That would be his breakfast. And I'd be lathering up this, I'd eat enough for a family for a week, you know, and they'd be looking at me. And I gained 30 pounds in a month. Okay, I'm out of control. I'm a compulsive overeater in Paris. And I'll just, I want to leave a few minutes for questions. So I'll conclude with my famous bottom, which is always fascinating to me. I can tell you that this, if you're out of control with the food or starving or bulimic or whatever, the more I prayed, the more I ate. That's what was so weird. It was almost like I'm holding on to this hot poker. And the more I prayed, the tighter I grabbed that poker. You see, abstinence to me represented gray sheet, which was this horrible starvation thing, you know. And I like, it was fear of the future, of what abstinence was like. And the present had to get literally so painful that I was willing to step into the unknown. That's the way I look back on it, en recul, as the French say. Now, with hindsight, 31 years plus abstinence. But at the time, the more I prayed, the more I grabbed that hot poker and sewer. It got so painful, I just dropped it. And I was in Marseille in the Gare, which is this train station. And I was in a language school in X, and I would take the Midnight Express up to Paris and go to meetings. I'm a founder, by the way, of the French-speaking AA group of Aix-en-Provence, co-fondateur with this other lunatic, Jean-Pierre C., who was absolutely off the wall. But two lunatics with a big book can do a lot of good. But anyway, I'd go up, take the Midnight Express up to Paris to go to meetings. And I remember saying to myself, I'm eating like my fifth French Mounds bar, you know, sugar up to here, you know. I'm buzzed on sugar. And I say to myself, do I want this more than abstinence? I said, this is insane, you know. Pants are getting tight, gaining weight. And the answer was, no, I want to be abstinent. Now, I'd like to tell you, I threw that Mounds bar down, but I'd already paid for it, and I didn't want to haggle with the fresh part. So I ate like my sixth Mounds bar, but I got on that couchette on that train. I used to sleep on these things. I never could sleep on them, but you sleep on these things overnight. And I get on the Midnight Express, come to Paris that morning. I said, well, I want to be abstinent. I go to a brasserie, order a couple softball eggs, take away the bread, s'il vous plaît, you know, enlever le pain, s'il vous plaît. Because bread was one of my vendors over there, good bread, I'm saying. But I had coffee, I said, put the milk in the coffee. You know, screw you. Edie was not, you know, on my shoulder like a gargoyle in Notre Dame, you know. So I go ahead and put milk in the coffee. I had a couple softball eggs, milk, get rid of the bread, that was a binge food, a couple apples or whatever for dessert. It was abstinent, and I enjoyed it. And I had milk in the coffee, and it was enough. So I'm, you know, trudging around Paris doing my thing. Lunchtime, same thing, brasserie. Steak, frites, no. Pas de frites, s'il vous plaît. Enlevez les frites du salade. On lui dit les frites. Okay, so he brings me salad instead of French fries. I got meat, I got salad. Enlevez le pain, no bread. Milk in the coffee. Café au lait, s'il vous plaît. And absent. Pear for dessert or apple? Yeah, pear. Screw you, Edie. I'm a pear. Absent. Dinner, same thing, you know? Meat, salad, no bread, fruit for dessert, milk and a coffee, no problem. And I arrived at the Monday night meeting. It was on the right night near the Senate building. No, it was near the President's Palace, whatever they call it. St. Michael's English Church. And I wanted to get in there and be the star of the meeting, you know, because this is the biggest loser meeting in the history of Overeaters Anonymous. And I wanted to be a VIP or star. And so when they finish reading how it works and all that stuff, anybody have anything to say? And my hand shoots up. I got something to say to you guys. I am abstinent today. And then Natalie looks at me and goes, I'm abstinent today. And then Bob R. goes, I'm abstinent today. And then anorexic. The whole group got abstinent on the same day. Same time. And I've always said it's the greatest spiritual event in France since Lourdes. The whole group, it's a group miracle in Paris. And I couldn't be the star of the goddamn meeting. But see, God will take my defects and he'll use them. And from that meeting came French AA. We have plenty of French AA, we have plenty of English-speaking AA, but we didn't have French OA, because we just had those little two struggling groups. And from that came the whole OA movement in Paris. My time is up. I didn't get a chance to take you guys through the steps, because, once again, OA never gives me enough time, as far as I'm concerned. They taped me at the birthday party last year. I went through the whole big book. They proceed to lose the CD. I can't find it. I don't know what that is. God does not. Stop clapping, Leslie. God does not want me to superstar VIP, but it's still the best goddamn big book workshop I've heard in my life for 31 plus years. You got, what's his name, Harlan doing it now, and I attended his, and you got some guy on the internet, Laurie, from Canada doing it, and they're good. But I was the first and I was the best. But what can I tell you? God wants me to be very anonymous, apparently. So will that be, throw it up in the questions? Or that's it? That's it? No questions? Nothing? All right. Sorry.